Ideas. Great physics can't be deduced strictly from experimental data. A certain aesthetic sense of the universe and its beauty is required. Beauty is an inspiration for and generator of ideas. This brings to mind Dostoevsky's saying in The Brothers Karamazov, "The world will be saved by beauty." Physicists have to develop a certain taste for the beautiful. In his book Across the Frontiers, Heisenberg cites the Latin motto, "Beauty is the splendor of truth," which expresses the idea that we first recognize truth by its splendor, by the way it shines forth. Heisenberg cites a definition of beauty that stems from Plotinus. Beauty is the translucence, through the material phenomenon, of the eternal splendor of the One. It is truly beautiful when the deeper unified field reveals itself through the physical world. Speaking about beauty, Heisenberg writes, "Let us declare that in exact science, no less than in the arts, it is the most important source of illumination and clarity. As Pauli told us, all understanding is a protracted affair, inaugurated by processes in the unconscious long before the content of consciousness can be rationally formulated." Speaking of the joy of understanding, Pauli writes that becoming acquainted with new knowledge seems therefore to rest upon a correspondence, a coming into congruence of pre-existent internal images of the human psyche with external objects and their behavior. It is as if in recognizing this correlation between the external event and the internal image, we remember something we once knew long ago. Heisenberg writes, "The apprehension of ideas by the human mind is more an artistic intuiting, a half-conscious intimation. The central idea is that of the beautiful and the good, in which the divine becomes visible, and at sight of which the wings of the soul begin to grow." Plato in the Phaedrus speaks of the soul remembering something it had unconsciously possessed all along. Plato expresses the idea that the soul becomes awestruck and shudders at the sight of the beautiful, feeling something evoked deep within it that, although catalyzed by the outer senses, has its origins deep in the subterranean realms of the unconscious. Many of Wheeler's speculations were what he called an idea for an idea. He was of the opinion that burgeoning researchers need freedom to experiment with ideas. The conceptual tension that arises between conflicting ideas can potentially become the source of creative insight. Wheeler comments, "Progress in science owes more to the clash of ideas than the steady accumulation of facts." In his writings, Wheeler cites Bohr, who was of the opinion that there is no hope in making any progress in one subject unless one is confronted with a difficulty or paradox, what Jung considers to be one of our most valuable spiritual possessions. If one can find a second difficulty, then one is in luck, as out of this creative tension, one can then play off one difficulty with the other and begin to move ahead. To quote Wheeler, "Sad the weak without a paradox, a difficulty, an apparent contradiction. For how can one then make progress?" Jung writes that only the paradox comes anywhere near to comprehending the fullness of life. Non-ambiguity and non-contradiction are one-sided, and thus unsuited to express the incomprehensible. Oftentimes, apparent contradictions have their source in the inadequacy of language itself. When we encounter a paradox, it is a signal that our accepted assumptions and concepts about things are breaking down, indicating that new ideas and new ways of looking at the world are being called for. The paradox does not tell, it points. It is a sign, not the thing pointed to. It is important to not avoid paradoxes and contradictions in order to maintain conceptual consistency. Shrinking away from paradoxes comes at the expense of completeness. Rather, if we are able to embrace the paradoxes and hold the tension of seemingly opposed and contradictory perspectives, we are preparing the space for the next step to creatively reveal itself. Currently, we are at a transition point, as two contradictory worldviews, the classical and the quantum, are encountering each other. This is not just in physics, but also deep within the human psyche, as it is ultimately the psyche from which all our physics is derived. It is the leaving behind of commonly agreed upon truths that have been outgrown and shown to be wrong that helps to propel science and human civilization forward. It is as if we have to come up with a new idea regarding how to deal with reality. Wheeler felt that at the bottom of our universe was not a mathematical equation, but rather a simple idea. In Wheeler's opinion, the most revolutionary discovery in science is yet to come, and come not by questioning the quantum, but by uncovering that utterly simple idea that demands the quantum. It is Wheeler's opinion that until we arrive at this basic idea underlying the quantum, we have not understood the essence of the quantum principle. Wheeler felt that everything important is at bottom utterly simple. He felt that if we really understood the central point which quantum theory is revealing, one ought to be able to state it in one clear, simple sentence. Until we see the quantum principle with this simplicity, we can well believe that we do not know the first thing about the universe, about ourselves, and about our place in the universe. For physicists, the description in plain language will be a criterion of the degree of understanding that has been reached. Einstein remarked that our physical theories ought to lend themselves to so simple a description that even a child could understand them. In a similar vein, Letterman says, "If the basic idea is too complicated to fit on a t-shirt, it's probably wrong." Heisenberg often cited the Latin motto, "The simple is the seal of the true." Wheeler once proposed a challenge: describe quantum mechanics in 5 words or fewer. Physicist Sean Carroll's response: "Don't look, waves. Look, particles." What is this utterly simple idea that Wheeler is positing that demands a quantum world? Could it have to do with the dreamlike nature of reality, a perspective which embraces the role of consciousness in creating our world? How would we essentialize this idea to fit on a t-shirt, a wristband, a bumper sticker, or a tweet? Jung writes, "He alone is a philosopher who can transmute a vision born of nature into an abstract idea, thereby translating it into a universally valid language." It is a primordial idea that grows up quite as naturally in the philosopher and is simply part of the common property of mankind, in which, in principle, everyone has a share. The golden apples drop from the same tree, whether they be gathered by a locksmith's apprentice or by a Schopenhauer. The figure that Jung is referring to as a philosopher, which can also be called an artist, poet, or a scientist, is someone who is able to translate their unique vision into a communicable idea. This ability is not just available to the credentialed or privileged few, but can be accessed by anyone with sufficient receptivity and attunement. The quantum is a primordial idea that is literally born out of nature herself into the minds of philosophers and physicists, and maybe you and me. Wheeler felt that there are some ideas out there that are waiting to be discovered. It is as though some ideas are in the air, pervading the underlying field of collective unconscious, just waiting to be tuned into and received. Some ideas suggest themselves, particularly when their time has come. In Wheeler's words, ideas can't be locked away in vaults. Thank goodness for this. The time is approaching, and maybe it's already here, for certain formerly radical ideas to be entertained. Revolutionary ideas have the potential to catalyze revolutions, after all. Philip K. Dick, in writing about ideas, considers it quite important that, in a certain literal sense, ideas are alive. He asks the question, what does this mean to say that an idea or a thought is literally alive, and that it seizes on men here and there and makes use of them to actualize itself into the stream of human history? In these questions, Dick is turning our conception of things on their head. Do we think ideas, or do they think us? As is evidenced throughout history, human beings can become possessed by ideas, which can be either a good or a bad thing, depending on the idea. Jung writes, "Greater than all physical dangers are the tremendous effects of delusional ideas. The notion of an objectively existing universe qualifies as such a delusional idea with its concomitant danger." Speaking about a novel idea, Dick continues, "He, the person who had the idea, did not invent it, or even find it. In a very real sense, it found him. And this is a little frightening to contemplate, he has not invented it. But on the contrary, it invented him. It is as if the idea created him for its purposes." So when the time has come for an idea to emerge into our world, the idea, which according to Dick's conception has a life of its own, enlists a receptive mind to be its purveyor. This line of thinking makes Dick wonder whether the cosmos is one vast entity that thinks. The cosmos, Dick comments, may in fact do nothing but think. Maybe the fact that we are thinking creatures is a reflection that the cosmos itself thinks. Etymologically, the word idea has to do with a way of seeing, a perspective through which we view the world. As Feynman says, there is no authority who decides what is a good idea. One mark of a good idea in theoretical physics is the fun, excitement, and new pathways of creative thought that it generates. If the idea opens up new perspectives on things, enabling novel work to extend in different, previously unimagined directions, then it is probably a good idea. Wheeler writes, "New ideas must correspond to old ones, must include them, but must transcend them." Unfortunately, we seem to have fallen into a kind of anti-intellectualism, an intellectual dark age in which many people are frightened of new ideas. In societies with a totalitarian bent, which many people argue the U.S. is fast approaching, new ideas can even be criminalized, a process that can become internalized within our minds. In the novel 1984, George Orwell uses the power of the fictive imagination to describe a society in which thought itself was controlled. In Orwell's world, children were taught to use a simplified form of English called Newspeak in order to assure that they could never express ideas that were dangerous to the prevailing order of society. Orwell's prescient work of imagination could be seen to be descriptive of the very world we live in. From the point of view of the powers that be, the very idea of the quantum, due to its empowering and liberating nature, is precisely such a dangerous idea. We as a species are desperately in need, however, of a saving idea. The idea of the quantum perfectly fits the bill. Speaking about a new idea, what he refers to as a conceptual dislocation, Dick writes, "It must invade his mind and wake it up to the possibility of something he had not up to then thought of." In what turns out to be a true collaboration between author and reader, Dick continues that a new idea sets off a chain reaction of ramification ideas in the mind of the reader. It, so to speak, unlocks the reader's mind so that that mind, like the author's, begins to create. A new idea, which oftentimes is said to fall into our head, the question arises, from where, can wake us up to what is possible, and like a key, can unlock the latent creative spirit, a treasure that has been hidden deep within the recesses of our mind, a spirit that has been thirsting to be set free. Maybe the quantum is such an idea entering our mind stream at this very moment. Dick writes, "An odd aspect of these rare, extraordinary ideas that puzzles me is their mystifying cloak of, shall I say, the obvious." In other words, some of the most mind-blowing ideas are so obvious that they are staring us in the face, and this is why no one notices them. A judicious questioning of the obvious may well be a mark of genius. Wheeler writes, "Surely someday we can believe, we will grasp the central idea of it all is so simple, so beautiful, so compelling that we will all say to each other, 'Oh, how could it have been otherwise? How could we all have been so blind so long?'" Our idea of ourselves, who we think we are, is a primary driving force in human affairs, as who we imagine we are and how we think that we fit into the greater scope of the universe powers the major currents of world history. In pre-quantum classical physics, human beings were conceived of as isolated, impotent beings in a mindless, mechanical universe. The revelations in quantum physics are pointing out that through our consciousness, we are all integral participants in nature's ongoing process of creation. Instead of being cogs in a giant machine that operates like clockwork, we are creative mental hubs in an ever-evolving and infinitely interconnected network of ideas. Wheeler has described the greatest physicists, and I'm sure he would include everyone in this, as instruments in an orchestra of ideas, the orchestra of ideas being a reference to the universe. Classical physics' shallow conception of humanity is one of the main causes of today's growing economic, ecological, social, and moral problems, which obstruct the full flowering of our creative potential. Oftentimes, a shift in a single idea can precipitate a transition into a new epoch. Could it be that the most important impending development in science will be ideological in the realm of ideas rather than technological, involving a profound revisioning of science's conception of who we are and our place in the universe. Wheeler felt that finding a deeper conceptual foundation, ideological, from which we can derive quantum theory, rather than the experimental technological side, was where the greatest hope for progress in quantum physics lay. What quantum physics has unleashed in the realm of technology is the palest reflection of what it can potentially unleash within the human psyche.